accession number 231383.
Yes, we got to Tunis, and the celebrations, victory celebrations, were taking place with all the big wigs on the platforms, to Churchill and all the leaders. We were absolutely whacked, and we just had time to clean one side of all our vehicles and guns, the side that showed to the visitors, and we just got in the march past and just about made it. But we had achieved a very good answer. The whole campaign had been successful, and we had cleared Africa completely of the Axis forces. They had huge casualties, as of course did we, it was considered a great success.
And this shrapnel wound you got, did it put you out of action for any time?
Not at all. It must have been quite a small bit of shrapnel. I just...
Where did it hit you?
In the lower leg. Lower leg.
And it never worked its way out?
Not to my knowledge, no. Just ignored it. It may have dissipated in one way or another. I don't know. Anyway, everybody relaxed temporarily, but only for a short while we re-equipped and the Allies decided to go into Sicily and into Italy and up, hopefully, into Austria and Germany. We were sent to re-equip into the desert just south of Tripoli. Now, this was a great mistake, because although we were re-equipped, we were put into an area which was... must have been one of the hottest places in the world. The temperature, I think, was 110 degrees most of the time, and we were plagued with hot winds from the desert, from the south. The sand got into everything, food, tents, water, absolutely everything. We were short of water. We were given a pint of water a day for every purpose, cooking, eating, washing. We didn't do much washing. If you got in a truck and went very fast and opened the window, hopefully you'd get some cool air, but you didn't. The air that came in the truck was hotter than you were already. It was so uncomfortable that it took the gloss off our rearmament, and we were left out of the first invasion of Sicily. And we were taken to a better climatic situation and completed our re-equipment.
Whereabouts was this better situation?
It was back in Tunisia, away from Libya.
What were you re-equipped with?
All the guns were replaced, and all our trucks were brought up to date, maintained, and the ammunition and so on. It was a great deal to do, because we'd had a very heavy fighting period in Tunisia.
You mean you were re-equipped with new 25-pounders?
Some new ones, yes. I don't recollect exactly how many.
But not a different type of gun?
No. Just replaced. And then we, as they progressed in Sicily, we embarked, and we were put ashore at Taranto, which is on the heel of Italy, where the resistance was very sparse on the coast. But we went inland, sorted ourselves, went inland, and the First Army was then amalgamated with the Eighth Army, and we went up the east coast of Italy, first of all, and the Americans proceeded up the west coast. The Germans then put a general called Kesselring in command, and as we progressed upwards, they used to switch us from one side of Italy to the other, because going up the middle of Italy, of course, is this spine of mountains called the Apennines, and we had to switch from one side to the other and then back again, moving always by night and then firing in the daytime, which was very tiring. I don't know if Kesselring was confused, but I think we were confused, because it was a very intricate situation. And we progressed up, and we took Naples, and that was quite an experience, going through a city which was taken over. All the excitement of the crowds, and the Italians at that time were just about to surrender, and they were so pleased to see us, and cheered and shouted and gathered round us as we went. But we couldn't stop, because we had to push on upwards. Mussolini fell from power around this time, and he was incarcerated in the mountains, and we went back to the 8th Army side on the west, across the river Sangro, and then proceeded up, and then we came back again to the east, when the Germans set up a very good defensive line called the Gustav Line. Now, the difficulty with proceeding up Italy was that it had this spine of mountains through the middle, and down on either side were rivers and streams, about every quarter of a mile, every half a mile as you went up the country, there was a stream or river. And the Germans could fortify the wider, bigger rivers easily, and they blew all the bridges, and we had the most marvelous companies of sappers who put up Bailey bridges under fire. Very difficult problem. Bailey bridges being pre-built bridges which they could wheel up to the river and get across, but very difficult to do under fire, so that our tanks and vehicles could cross these rivers. And it was very, very hard going right up to near the Gustav Line, the pinnacle of which was the village and the monastery of Cassino, Benedictine monastery, Cassino at the top of a mountain, and the little village of, or town of Cassino, which was halfway down. we got there, but the Germans resisted very strongly there. We think, we're sure, that they used the monastery as an observation post because it had a most marvellous view of everything in front of it. Whether or not it was otherwise fortified, this can always conjecture.
Were you still doing your forward observation officer work?
Yes, at this time I was second in command of the battery, and then the battery commander, Newfoundlander, super Newfoundland officer called Bill Black, was wounded, and I took over command of the battery, and we proceeded as far as Casino. We could only get onto the plain in front of Casino, no real cover. We could see Casino, they could see us. We were under constant gunfire, but we were able to shell Casino and the monastery. We shelled the monastery regularly, and we also put up smoke screens in front of the monastery to stop them observing our troop movements and the plain below. The Gustav Line stretched right across Italy, but as I say, Cassino was the key point in the middle. We had I think it was four battles to try and to win Cassino. First of all, the Americans went in and they tried very hard, but they were unsuccessful. We put in a terrific air raid of the monastery and the town. It went on for hours and that practically flattened it. But between the monastery and underneath the town, there were innumerable tunnels and caves which were perfect for defence. And the Germans just disappeared down these and came up again when the firing stopped. And the misfortune with that was that when we got our tanks that far, they couldn't get over all the rubble and the chaos. So it was a very difficult situation to attack. The New Zealanders went in, they were repulsed and lost a lot of men. A few weeks later, I had General Mark Clark, the American general, and General Alexander, who was in command of the whole force. I had them both on my gun position one morning, and during that day there was the most terrific air raid on, again, Cassino and the monastery. 500 odd planes, which was a lot in those days, from areas all over Europe of course Italy, converging on those two objectives, and the bombing just went on for hours. They dropped bombs on the British headquarters behind and on a French occupied village behind. That's what happened in the war, and will always still happen, and probably will always happen, accidents like that. But in general, the bombing was as effective as bombing could be. But again, it meant that the New Zealanders went in that afternoon, and they still couldn't make progress because the Germans just came out of their holes again. And the tanks couldn't make any progress over the rubble. So again, that was not successful. The fourth battle, eventually, there was a terrific artillery. We put up a terrific artillery barrage, and the Polish regiment came up and actually took the monastery. They went in fresh troops, and they did a great job. Occupied the monastery, and the Germans were then in retreat. We had previously landed at a place called Anzio. The Gustav line was 100 miles or so below Rome, and between the Gustav line and Rome, there was a seaside place called Anzio.
Did you personally land at Anzio?
No. We had put troops in at Anzio, but they were held by the Germans, so they couldn't explode in the direction of the Gustav line or Rome or anywhere. After we'd got Cassino, the Germans fell back.
In the battle for Cassino, did you have much incoming fire against your unit?
All the time we were being shelled because of their wonderful observation situation. You know, it was just ongoing. I mean, it wasn't 100% day and night, but it was. It meant that you couldn't move easily on the plane. We were being watched the whole time. The Germans fell back, and we ran into a difficulty in that General Alexander ordered Mark Clark, the American general, to cut off the Germans before they escaped up to the north. In the meantime, Mussolini had been rescued from the mountains by a German plane that landed, picked him out of his prison camp and took him back to the north of Italy, and he formed a new republic, the Italians having surrendered in the south, Mussolini set up a government in the north, which was supported completely by the Germans, but not really liked very much by the Italians. The Italians in the south, as I said, surrendered and were helpful to us. Anyway, the Germans were escaping from the Gustav line towards the north, and Mark Clark was ordered to cut them off, these Americans. He disobeyed that order, and he turned his Americans into Rome, and he captured or took over Rome, which was no longer actually fortified as the Germans disappeared. Now, that had two effects. The first effect was that the capture of Rome was considered a great prize throughout the world, and it was 2 days before the D-Day landings in north of France, and it was considered to be a terrific help to them that they had this particularly good news as they went into the north of France.
How did you feel at the time about Mark Clark?
Well, it was very unfortunate from our point of view, because the Germans escaped further north, set up further defensive lines, and it meant that we had another complete winter and more of mud and rain and cold. The mud in Italy was unbelievable. People think that Italy is sunny Italy, but it's nothing like that for a large part of the year, particularly in the more mountainous areas where they get a colossal amount of rain. And of course the roads and the bridges and everything just didn't stand up to the amount of traffic, tank traffic and that sort of thing that we put over them. And we were just wallowing in seas of mud so much of the time. And we had another winter of miserable cold and mud to go through, and lost a lot of people, of course. But we gradually overcame the Germans as they retreated up north. I had one or two interesting experiences, because although one was on duty so much of the time, we occasionally had a day's leave or something like that, or a 2 days' leave. I mean, we needed it so badly. I remember one time I got down to Naples on a 2 day leave, and there's a lovely British club in Naples on the bay, or there was, and we had a very good evening there, and some Americans too, and some nurses and so on. And a nurse and I were invited to visit an American ship which was in the bay, I don't know what size it was, and we went aboard this ship and we went for drinks in the wardroom. Now the ship, the American Navy was, and the British Navy were all forming in the Bay of Naples, because they landed, attacked and landed in the south of France a number of days and weeks later. So everybody was teed up for this flotilla in Naples Bay for the attack on France. And we went out to this destroyer, I think it was an American destroyer, after we'd had this very good evening at the British Club. And we got onto the destroyer and went into the ward room, which was the officer's leisure room, a very tiny room, and we had a drink. The American ships were supposed to be dry, but I think this was an exceptional occurrence. And I looked across the wardroom, and right at the other side was a chap sitting there, and I recognized him as Douglas Fairbanks Jr. Now, he was probably at that time the best-known American film star. He was a wonderfully active chap, good-looking and flashing eyes and very popular, and you'd call him a megastar these days. He was really one of the top actors. This nurse I was with said, "You know, that's Douglas Fairbanks." I said, "Yes, yes." I said, "He's incognito. You don't want to." She said, "I want his autograph." And I said, "You can't. You know, he's off duty. You can't do that sort of thing." Anyway, I got across, and eventually I had a short chat with him. Very, very pleasant chap. And we came off the ship after the party and went back to the club in our billet. And the nurse showed me, as we came off, a piece of paper, Douglas Fairbanks Jr. So I thought, well, women, you know, what can you do? She managed very well. Anyway, on these leaves, I was, you know, had odd jobs occasionally. There was a gin factory in a place called Benevento, and we used to get lots of the local gin to add to what we could get to the naffy and bring it back to the unit, and several things like that. One thing that we had to be careful about when you're being shelled, as we were a great part of the time, you heard a shell coming by a sort of whistle, and your mind could attune yourself to how close it was going to be by the tone of the whistle as it came towards you. And if it was very close, you knew you had to get your face into the mud straight away. If it was a slightly different sort of whistle, you could sort of risk it as landing 20 or 30 yards away or something like that. And we had a brigadier up to see us. Brigadiers didn't usually live in the front line, but we this chap came up to see what was going on. And I just got back from one of these leaves, and my mind wasn't in attune to these shells. I'd just been out of action for a few days. And I heard this whistle, and I shouted at the brigadier, I said, "Down, get right down." And he got right down, got himself covered with mud, and the thing landed about 20 or 30 yards away, and I was a bit unpopular then, but it's the sort of thing that went on. Another time I was at a brigadier's briefing, and I'd lost my wristwatch, I remember, and I had an alarm clock, and it was in the bottom of my battle dress pocket, and all sorts of things on top of it, food and maps and papers and things. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the brigadier's briefing, this alarm clock went off, and I couldn't stop the wretched thing. I couldn't get the papers out, and this thing went on, and the brigadier was absolutely furious. But then brigadiers got furious in those days. That was all right. But strange life. And then moving up through Italy, through all the villages and towns, they were very much bombed before we got to them, very weird experience. And we had a lot of landmines and personnel mines to watch out for. The Germans were very good at laying these anti-personnel mines, which were connected with a string, and when you touch the string, they'd leap up a metre or two in the air, and then they would explode with shrapnel going left, right and centre. Sniping was another nasty thing. There were always one or two Italians left behind who weren't sympathetic to us. You would be walking through a town or a village and you would hear a ping, and something would hit the brickwork behind you, you know, and you think, "Oh Lord, let's get out of the way." Sniping's very, very uncomfortable. Another trick was they used to put a wire or a string across the road, head height, and I used the signaller's motorbike for getting to places up and down. One day I was careering up a road on this motorbike, and there was one of these wires which I didn't see across the road, and it got me round the neck. And fortunately it was loose enough, and I managed to get a hand on the brakes sufficiently to pull up to avoid it doing any further damage. But always you were aware, and you had to be alert that somebody was trying to get you. It was a sort of a nasty thing. It's always the case in war. There's always, if you're involved, then there's somebody trying to get you somehow, and you have to be really alert all the time.
Is the child real far?
Anyway, we pushed up through it.